Welcome to the IMA All-Member Conference Call. My name is Brian Burton, and I serve as the President and CEO of the Indiana Manufacturers Association. I have been in and around the State House for over three decades now, and these are the most extraordinary times that I have seen, and probably most of you on the call here have seen, in the speed, the information that's out there, shutting down state after state after state, truly remarkable. Your IMA team that you're going to hear from today is Andrew Berger, our Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs, and also Malika Butler, who is our Assistant Vice President of Governmental Affairs. Your team has been constantly on the phone with numerous different agencies, the governor's office, with our members, trying to get information, particularly since the news broke at noon yesterday that the governor was going to put the state under an executive order. We've been analyzing that executive order, and what we're here to do today is to talk about some of the functions of that executive order and also to let you know of some other things that are going on. Just a few minutes ago, I got off the phone with the Commissioner of Workforce Development to get some updates from him. As you can imagine, the unemployment claims have been skyrocketing. Just since Monday, there were 38,000 phone calls to the department. On the claims filed as of Sunday through Monday yesterday, there were 41,000 claims filed, and they're anticipating by the end of the week that they'll have between 100 and 108,000 claims that are filed. Now, that compares to this same week a year ago where 3,000 claims were filed, so a dramatic increase in that. Given the fact that there's so many questions about the executive order and how it's being interpreted, who's essential, who's not essential, who can travel, who cannot travel, we put together a series of questions that were in the invite to come out. Those are what we're going to focus on, and then we're also going to be talking about a few other items as we go through at the end here. But we'll be talking about some tax issues, item issues, and also some unemployment changes that will be coming your way. But I wanted to start out by just saying that this event is being recorded. We will be posting it on our website, so if you want to pass it along to friends, neighbors, please feel free to do so. If perchance the system is overloaded and you know someone that is not available to get on the conference call today, you can email that to them or send them to our website. So any questions that you have at the end of this, please send them. At the bottom of the page, you'll have a listing of what to do. You send them to Andrew Berger on our staff at aberger@imawebe.com, and then he'll answer those questions, and we'll post them up on our website so all other members can benefit from it. At this point, I'll turn it over to Andrew to start going through the questions that we emailed to you, and we'll let you know what we had. Malika Butler and I were both successful in getting into the governor's business and industry hotline this morning. It took some work. They had some technical problems and some capacity issues, but we did get through, and we received some conflicting answers that we'll be going through, but hopefully we'll provide some guidance here today. So, Andrew, why don't you take it over?
Thanks, Brian, and thank you all for joining us on the call today. The first question that we had for the governor almost immediately after the order was issued yesterday at noon was a very basic one for a manufacturing or any business that may fall underneath the essential operations category, which I think covers most manufacturing in this case, is that how would you certify whether or not you are an essential operation or not? And while we have gotten some conflicting information, there seems to be some role with the IEDC in clarifying this or giving businesses some direction. The fundamental answer is that you will be in charge of certifying yourself or deciding whether or not you fall within the definitions that are within the executive order. And those definitions we put out in our member alert yesterday. Many different categories. I'll go through them here briefly. If you're connected in any way or to producing products or services for healthcare, pharmaceutical, technology, biotechnology, chemicals and sanitation, agriculture, waste, food and beverage, transportation, energy, steel and steel products, petroleum, fuel, mining, construction, defense, communications, and other products. So a large category, and one that they're looking to the companies themselves, those on this call, to determine whether or not they are an essential business or an essential operation. What documentation do businesses need? At this point, none, though I know there are other questions about if you have suppliers that you deem essential, but they their operations themselves might not fall into it. It may be appropriate to send them letters, or if you're a supplier, to request letters that you're part of the supply chain of an essential business. That gets into a question further down. And then before I allow Brian or Malika here to jump in and add their two cents, what documentation is required for employees to travel to and from work? This is an important one since this order goes into effect at midnight this evening. While we have heard that there's not a great deal of focus on enforcement at the local level, we don't know all that's going on out there. So it's our recommendation to you that you do provide some documents to your employees as they're traveling to and from your place of business. And we are working on a form letter to put on our website and on our COVID-19 forum to allow you to easily include your company name, that your operation is essential, and that this employee is traveling to and from work. Brian and Malika, do you have anything to add?
Well, let me just add, Andrew, that literally about 15 minutes ago, I was on a conference call with the governor's assistant and his two legal counsel, and they reiterated the point that particularly for your supply chain, if you deem them essential and send them a letter saying, I'm an essential industry and we deem you essential to our operations, then they would be covered under the executive order also. And then also verify that if you send a letter with your employees saying that they work for an essential industry and they are coming to and from work, they are on business-related activities, then they can show that to law enforcement if they happen to be pulled over. I was also told by one of the governor's staff is that they are not anticipating the enforcement shall be state and local. They're not anticipating that they're going to be pulling people over, although we have already heard that that is occurring and we're trying to track down where that occurred. But if someone is pulled over for a traffic infraction or something like that, then they will be checking for why they are out at that point. So go ahead, Andrew.
The other element I think that's an important clarification is that even if your business does not fall into one of these essential operations categories, you are still allowed to maintain a basic minimum function. And that is defined in the executive order as people who are there to maintain the integrity of your inventory, the security of your premises. If you need individuals to come into work for payroll and benefits, or if you need them to ensure that employees can work from home, if that's a part of your operations as we move forward. All of these employees, not just the basic minimum activities, but even if you're an essential business and your operations can continue, everyone, and this is in the order, needs to be conforming to the social distancing and cleanliness requirements to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. So that applies to everybody regardless of whether or not you're an essential operation or not. To Brian's point about the local enforcement, a key question that we've seen, because we do know and have had a couple of examples forwarded to us about local ordinances, and the question was, does the state order supersede the local ordinances? And Brian heard directly on this is that it does, so long as it concerns topics that the order, that the state order addresses. So the locals can be more stringent if their local orders are addressing things that the state, the governor's action does not address. Now, since the governor's office clearly addresses what is and what is not an essential operation for manufacturing and others, that should be controlled by state policy. But because of the speed at which this is moving and the general confusion about it, I would not be surprised if there are local officials who haven't gotten that word or actively trying to talk to the state local government associations and, of course, the administration to try and get this point clarified.
Yeah, this is a key critical issue because, and as I told you about a half an hour ago, I was on the call with the governor's assistant and his two legal counsel. A patchwork of, because many of our members are in multiple locations, their businesses have multiple locations, a patchwork of regulations and ordinances is not conducive to clear direction. So we're encouraging the governor's office to try to address this. We hope this does not become a major problem.
That's right. And I think local units are largely dealing with some of the same problems that we all are, is that they're trying to ensure the continuity of their operations, and they're doing, you know, public safety and legal court things. So a lot of other critical operations as well. So I think that's their focus right now. But of course, you know, we're going to have to start addressing this in less than 24 hours. So it's important that we are trying to get as great a uniformity as we can around the state. And to that point, what are the enforcement mechanisms? The order just allows state police, of course, but also local units to do this. We've not heard of anything specifically about penalties other than those that are attached to the restaurant industry. The governor specifically allowed penalties on that. I don't know if this means that there are no other penalties otherwise unless local units decide to implement them. And then finally, who is in charge of coordinating and notifying local units about these policies? And Brian, I don't know if they addressed that in your conversation with them earlier, but you know, other than
they did,
they did. Okay,
and
go
they
ahead,
said
please.
The governor's office is working in with conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security, and they named off about 6 or 8 different agencies, of which they're trying to coordinate the information and then getting out to local units of government. I think there's probably one of the biggest problems we have right now is that the lack of information out to these local units on what they can and cannot do. And because of that lack of information, I think some will step forward to with some much more stringent than probably what is necessary. I would ask that if you in your communities, you hear of your local municipalities, county councilors, whoever, go enacting ordinances or orders that are stricter than what you believe to be the governor's executive order, please contact us immediately so that we're aware of where that is occurring and we can relay that information back to the State House and also the governor's office with our concerns.
Thank you. That's that goes through the questions that we posted here that are very much focused on how do we address this in the very real term or in the very near term. Because, as I said, the order goes into effect by the end of the day today and will be in effect through the start of April 7th. So, we're looking at this immediately, and hopefully we have some clarity here for you on, at least on what happens tomorrow. There are other questions that we've gotten, and please send me what other, it doesn't have to be about the executive order, it can be about any of these issues, and we will post the answers on our forum, which is, you can find on our website, and of course get back to you directly. Brian, I don't know if you're ready to talk about these other issues or if you have anything you'd like to follow up with.
No, I think if we could go into the tax, also IDEM has some directives that are out there, and then I just want to close by going through some of the provisions of the changes to the unemployment insurance system, which are fairly dramatic. So, Andrew, if you want to talk about that, the tax issues, and then guide it.
Yeah, so last Thursday, the state, the governor issued another order that dealt with some of the state operations. The Department of Revenue did extend the deadline for payments and filings out to July 15th for corporate and individual income taxes. The property taxes are still due on May 11th, but there are no penalties for 60 days. Now, myself and others have been in conversation with the administration about extending some of those filing deadlines, particularly the personal property filing deadline. That's not official yet, though I know those discussions are ongoing. And then finally, and this may bleed into another topic here, there's no use tax or any tax consequences when you supply any medical equipment or produce any medical equipment for the healthcare industry as part of the response. Brian, I know you've had more conversations about the process to collect the PPE for hospitals and nursing homes and others, if you want to get into that now, or maybe Malika on IDEM.
Yeah, let me just touch on the personal protective equipment. As we all see on the news, TV, no matter where you look, that's the number one thing that's in short supply right now. And if you look at the email that we sent out a few days ago, there was a call out from the governor's office, and they had attached a file that listed all the personal protective equipment that they're looking for. They're looking for not only excess stock to be sent to coordinated through the governor's office, but also any employer that can repurpose manufacturing to help and assist in preparing or manufacturing some of the items that are needed. Manufacturers are stepping up all over this state and stepping up all over the country and trying to repurpose as quickly as possible. I know that that is occurring here in the state of Indiana. I just received information this morning on the converting an auto manufacturing area to produce respirators in great need. But here's an email address. If you have excess PPE, personal protective equipment, that you would be willing to donate to the strategic stockpiles of the state, they're distributing those out to the hospitals. The gentleman's name is Paul Pieper, P-E-A-P-E-R, and he's with the governor's office coordinating this. His email is pper@gov.in.gov. Go through that again. That's pper@gov.in.gov. So it's you can contact him directly. They're looking, trying to coordinate that at this point. So Malika, if you want to cover the IDEM issues.
Sure, and thank you everyone for taking time to hop on this call with us. I hope we can provide some clarity through these challenges that everyone's facing. I've received a couple questions in regard to the permitting and enforcement discretion with the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. So under the executive order from yesterday, IDEM will be closed beginning today through at least April 7th. And the conversations I've had with the department is that the department will continue to expect compliance, but they will be employing common sense and use discretion regarding a facility's ability or inability to meet environmental requirements under specific circumstances in their permit programs. So IMA members, you're encouraged to contact the agency as issues arise and explain any kind of extenuating circumstances that you may be experiencing. And IDEM has indicated that they are willing to work with facilities as we move through this uncertain time. So I understand that there may be issues that people won't know about until, and they arose until some time after the fact. So it is really important that we, that documentation for any kind of instance is taken place and for any related issues. So, and we'll continue to be in contact with the department and update our members as we get more information.
Great. Thank you, Malika. Let me just touch on some of the unemployment insurance changes at the federal level that have been enacted, will be coming. Fairly dramatic changes. They are encouraging states and providing assistance. As you know, in unemployment, your first week on unemployment is a waiting period, a one-week waiting period. They're looking at eliminating that so that the first week of unemployment would pay benefits to the folks doing that. They're creating a special new pandemic unemployment assistance programs to provide unemployment for those that are traditionally not eligible for unemployment insurance, and that includes those that are self-insured, those independent contractors, and so it's those that have not filed with the department or have not paid into the system will now be eligible for some level of assistance through the unemployment insurance system. We're not sure at this point on what percentage. I think they're looking at the federal government to pay about 50% of those costs and the states to pay about 50%, but that's yet to be determined. Also, the provisions also provide for those that are affected by the pandemic an additional $300 a week for each UI claim or those under the pandemic unemployment assistance program. So the maximum benefit for unemployment insurance in Indiana is $390 a week. They would put another $600 on top of that. So that would truly affect the trust funds. We're anticipating that the feds are going to pick up hopefully all of that cost, but that's yet to be determined. And then it also provides for those that have been gone through their regular benefits, they're adding another 13 weeks of benefits on top of the regular benefits they receive. Once someone files a claim, they're eligible. That's their claim period for 52 weeks. That's they can collect 26 weeks of benefits within that 52-week period. This would add another 13 weeks on top of the 26 weeks, so you'd have 39 weeks of benefits. Major changes coming to the unemployment insurance system. They're also looking at providing states, and they'll divvy it up based upon formula, $500 million to assist in administrative funds that will be also available. That is not to mention the changes that are being discussed right now or are coming right now on, we'll have more information on that as we get it, on the expansion of the Family and Medical Leave Act, the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act for those that have been affected by the virus or that have been affected by their family members been affected by the virus. So a lot of provisions in that we're combing through and that we will go ahead and get out to our members just as soon as we have them. We are sorry we're not opening this up for calls because of the volume that is out there. We ask again that you email Andrew Berger at aberger@imaweb.com your questions. We will get back to you. And then we will post those up on our website in our forum section so everyone can benefit from that. As we move into the next few days and weeks and hopefully not too many months, these are challenging times. These are probably the most challenging times that we will face in at least our generation, our lifetimes. And we hope and we pray that all of our businesses, our employees, our family members, extended family members, make it through safely. This is critical. This is a test for our nation. And I have to say that the manufacturing community is in the very unique position to be positioned to help in a time of crisis like this. We are the doers and we are the makers. All the material that is talked about on TV, from personal protective equipment to vaccines to testing kits to everything else, that is a manufactured product, and we are there doing it. So let's keep up the good work. We will have constant communication with you. First and foremost, we're here to answer your questions and provide assistance. Call us at any time, day or night. please get in touch with us. We thank you for your involvement and your membership in the IMA. You make this possible, and together we'll get through this. So thank you very much, and take care.